Good afternoon again, everybody. Brian Uber here from goldenblack.com. As if you don't need any more reason to wash your hands, I'm back with another one of our goldenblack.com quarantine, as we're calling it, simulcasts. What we're doing here, obviously, is just doing a little semi-regular, if not daily, sort of content piece that we can put all across our many, many platforms, whether it's at goldenblack.com, whether it's on social media, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on our YouTube channel, whether it's wherever. And I'm simulcasting the audio so we can upload it to our Golden Black Radio platform too as a sort of podcast to help you guys bide your time as you work from home, as you stay at home, as you get through these days, however we get through these days. Anything we can do to help you pass that time, anything we can do to keep you engaged, keep you entertained, we're here to do. So I will be the voice in your ear for the entirety of this, I guess what I'll call quiet period in sports. I'm told moratorium sounds too morbid, so I tend not to use that anymore. Quiet period. So this is our goldenblack.com quarantine simulcast. It is brought to you by our sponsors, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Follett's Purdue Bookstores, the 6th Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. I want to remind you that the 6th Street Dive in Lafayette is open for carryout orders, as are our longtime friends of the business, Arnie's and Bruno's. If you're looking for something to eat tonight, if you're intent to help our local businesses, which I think is crucially important, as everyone should, please keep the 6th Street Dive, Arnie's, and Bruno's in mind if you're local. All outstanding establishments who've been very kind to us, and please keep them in mind for your takeout desires, wants and desires, whatever, however you want to call it. So yesterday I did a little bit of a companion piece here to our early Purdue 2020-2021 basketball prospectus. Today, you know, under a different set of circumstances, Purdue would have been playing this past weekend, wherever it might have been. In a better, different set of circumstances, Purdue would have been playing in the NCAA tournament last weekend. In the best case scenario, different set of circumstances, Purdue would be playing this weekend in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Of course, there is none of that because of all that's going on. But I believe Saturday is the one-year anniversary of the overtime win over Tennessee, one of the great wins in Purdue NCAA tournament history. I will have a little retrospective on that game on our site on Saturday. I talked to Ryan Klein at length about his shot. You know the one I'm talking about. So I will put that on our website on Saturday for you to relive if you so desire. But in the meantime, people often ask me to kind of like talk about the best or rank, whatever it may be, the most memorable or best or my favorite, whatever, however you want to term it, NCAA tournament wins, NCAA tournament games, whatever. So I figured that's what I would do right here. Obviously, you know, Purdue's played in a lot of great NCAA tournament games, some of which didn't turn out all that great for Purdue, sometimes by sheer miracle for the opponent. But Purdue's had a hell of a lot of really, really good wins in the NCAA tournament too. And I don't know if I'm quite ranking them here, but I just wanted to kind of catalog a bunch of them here. I guess we can call this a ranking. I wrote them down in descending order, so pretty close to it. Starting off, obviously, I just mentioned the Tennessee win. Obviously, has to be considered Purdue's best NCAA tournament win under Matt Painter. It got Purdue to its first Elite Eight since the turn of the century. Not to mention the fact it came in really, really harrowing fashion against one of the best teams in college basketball. People maybe forget that about Tennessee. Last year was one of the best teams in college basketball, top to bottom. They were a really experienced team. They were a really physical team. They had grown men all across the floor playing for them. Grant Williams was a great college basketball player. Admiral Schofield was a really good college basketball player. That was a great team that Purdue beat, and Purdue beat them in really, really gutsy fashion. I'm going to use the word gutsy a lot because it comes up with a lot of these games. But Purdue wins 99-94 in overtime. Obviously, Carson Edwards, I think, got 30 in that game as part of his virtuoso performance in the NCAA tournament. Ryan Klein made unbelievable plays in the second half, including the shot I mentioned before. Carson Edwards gets fouled on the three-pointer to send the game to overtime, if I recall correctly. All this stuff does blur together for me, too. So if I say anything incorrectly, please forgive me. But there's a lot of stuff that happens in these games that kind of blurs together. Just a really, really high-level win for Purdue. Obviously, what was at stake makes this probably the biggest win of Matt Painter's tenure in the NCAA tournament at Purdue, because it got Purdue the lead eight. Obviously, the Virginia game ended the opposite way, the Tennessee game ending. Purdue probably felt after the Virginia game the way Tennessee felt after the Purdue game, and so on. But Purdue probably felt really good after that Tennessee game because it was an unbelievable win. The second one I have written down here is 2009, the win over Washington in Portland, I guess it was. Portland and Spokane kind of run together for me. My mid-sized Pacific Northwest cities sometimes get confused in my mind. That one, I believe, was in Portland. But Washington was a really good team. They were the higher seed. I believe they were a 4. Purdue was a 5. Washington had Isaiah Thomas on that team. They had John Brockman on that team. Just a terrific college basketball team. Coached by Lorenzo Romar, played an hour and a half from Seattle. So Washington had the de facto home court advantage, much the way Villanova did in Hartford in 2019. Some good it did Villanova, some good it did Washington as well. But that place was roaring, man. When Purdue got off to a great start, played really, really well, built a sizable lead, Washington came all the way back. That place was alive. That place was an on-campus college basketball facility at that point in time. Purdue had to overcome a good deal in that sense to hold on to that win. Two plays stand out to me. Obviously, if you recall that game, Juwan Johnson had to block a couple of shots consecutively to seal that win. Washington never overtook Purdue, but it came damn close. And Juwan Johnson had a couple of successive blocked shots. And that's an unbelievable basketball play to make. To go up, block a shot, come back down, go up and block another one. It's just an unbelievably athletic, instinctive play, and one that very few players can make. Juwan Johnson was a special defensive player, a special shot blocker, and that was the play that stands out to me about his whole career as a defensive player. Etuan Moore makes an incredible one-on-one jump shot off the dribble, where I believe he dribbles left to right, brings it back right to left through his legs from behind, gets his feet organized to shoot a pull-up jumper over whoever he just shook. Unbelievable one-on-one play by an unbelievable college basketball scorer. Not as consequential a shot as, say, Ryan Klein's jumper against Tennessee, but a big-time, big-time shot nonetheless by a big-time college basketball scorer. Next one I have written down here is Texas A&M in 2010. I think this one could go higher even for this reason. I think NCAA tournament wins should always be weighted against what you overcame to get them. And that was the year Purdue was a Final Four team midway through the year. They were getting better. Lewis Jackson had come back from injury. They were getting better. They had won consecutively, if I recall correctly, at Michigan State and Ohio State, both of whom were top 10 in the country. Purdue won on their home floors, I think, in back-to-back games. There might have been one game between them. I can't remember correctly. But that team was getting better. And that team in that form was the best shot Matt Painter had at a Final Four. That was a Final Four capable team if Matt Painter's ever had one. And we'll never know because Robbie Hummel tears his ACL at Minnesota. The rest is history. Purdue obviously still makes the tournament. There was a lot of talk about whether Purdue should even be a 4 seed in that tournament because they weren't the same team with Hummel. They went one and done in the Big Ten tournament. It looked horrible doing it. They lost at home to Michigan State, where Chris Kramer had to play the 4 and guard Raymar Morgan or somebody like that. Not a good matchup. But the fact that that team got past a really good Texas A&M team to get to the Sweet 16 kind of got Purdue back to a place where you could call that season a real success in light of what happened. I think Purdue would have gone much farther had Hummel not gotten hurt. But to get back to the Sweet 16 under those circumstances was a big, big deal. If you remember correctly, Purdue had its hands full in the first round with Siena. Fran McCaffrey's Siena team had to gut one out there and then got Texas A&M, who was a much better team than I think a 5 seed. They had grown men. Brian Davis was a really good player. They had some good guards on that team. Purdue gets it 63-61 thanks to another of the more iconic plays, probably in modern NCAA tournament history, Chris Kramer taking the ball out of a timeout. I don't know if anybody thought Chris Kramer is the guy taking that shot in that situation. I think everybody's thinking Etuan Moore's taking that shot. Etuan Moore probably thinks Etuan Moore's taking that shot. Chris Kramer sees an opportunity, takes it, finishes with his left hand at the basket over some size, and just an unbelievable play by Kramer, who never got enough credit for the offensive player he was at Purdue, because he never really asserted himself as much. But he was as fast, as quick, as explosive a player as Purdue has had, not named Carson Edwards, from an offensive perspective, probably under Matt Painter. People just don't talk about him that way because they tend to focus on his defense and his bravado and his energy as much as anything. But he really brought something to the table offensively, and you saw it there in no uncertain terms. That was an unbelievable play by Chris Kramer. The next game I have written down here is the 2017 win in Milwaukee over Iowa State. I was deathly ill for that game. That was one of my defining memories. The other defining memory was simply that Iowa State was awesome. They were grown men. They were physical. They were athletic. They were fearless. They were talented as hell. And even though Purdue was the 4 seed and Iowa State was the 5 seed, there was no difference between those two teams. Neither of those teams was better than the other. Purdue, again, played out of its mind in the first half, built a big lead. I remember tweeting at halftime that, you know, Purdue has a history for these sorts of games getting really competitive. A Purdue football player on Twitter told me to shut up, which I thought was funny. Who got the last laugh? Iowa State ends up taking the lead. Purdue ends up taking it back. Just an unbelievable college basketball game between two really, really good teams. It was too bad I was deathly ill at the time to really probably fathom all that had just happened. But I remember it being an unbelievable game. That was a really good Purdue team who'd gotten by Vermont in the first round, but a really good Iowa State team as well. DeAndre Burton was like mini Zion back in those days, and they moved him to the 5, I believe, and they got him some favorable matchups, and that sort of changed the game a little bit. But Purdue, to its credit, again, made huge plays down the stretch. I think P.J. Thompson made one of the million big threes in his career he made late in that game, and Purdue got a big-time win. Butler in 2018 is the next one I have written down here. Again, I think the caliber of these wins, you have to weigh it against what you overcame to do it. Butler was a 10 seed. That wasn't the best Butler team Butler's ever had. Purdue had just lost Isaac Haas 48 hours earlier against Cal State, whichever extension that was. I cannot remember. I can't keep them all straight. But Isaac Haas, late in that win over Cal State, whatever, had fractured his elbow. Isaac Haas was profoundly important to that team. He was, you don't want to call him the straw that stirred the drink, but he was the starting point. He was the foundation. He was the offensive matchup nobody could quite handle. Thus, the decision they had to make was Purdue's starting point. When the defense did this, you did this. When the defense did this, you did this. That was a big part of the reason why that team was so good. Part of the reason, too, that I'm as certain as I will ever be in an opinion that if Isaac Haas doesn't get hurt, Purdue beats Texas Tech in the Sweet 16. Purdue goes on to play Villanova in the Elite Eight. Who knows? Obviously, Villanova was a great team that went on to win it all, if I recall correctly. But I do think Purdue would have made the Elite Eight with Isaac Haas. The next win I have written down here, obviously these aren't as necessarily competitive. Well, actually, I have one more competitive one. The St. Mary's game in 2012 was a great college basketball game. Matthew Dellavedova was a pro for a long time, obviously. St. Mary's was a great team. A lot of adults, a lot of Australians playing for them as like 22 and 23-year-olds. Purdue was playing small ball. They reinvented themselves midseason. One of the best coaching jobs I think Matt Painter's done to get that team as far as it got. Just a great game. And what Purdue had done that year was they moved Robbie Hummel to the 5 midway through the season, made opposing big men chase him around the perimeter with very little success, forcing opponents, too, to put their worst defensive player on Tyrone Johnson, allowing the freshman guard to then destroy that player. And that is precisely what happened at St. Mary's. I believe Tyrone Johnson had 25 points in that game, maybe 20-something at least. But again, just a possession-to-possession game all the way through, a very physically mature, very talented, very deep St. Mary's team, as I recall it. Purdue wins a nail-biter, another quote-unquote gut test of an NCAA tournament win. A great win got them the chance to play Kansas. Obviously, you know how the Kansas game turned out. I thought that was much more the game normalizing and the better team taking over after making some halftime adjustments than it was Purdue choking. But obviously, Purdue was within a possession or two of beating Kansas to go to the Sweet 16. A couple of games to mention, too, here that I think are significant. They weren't quite as competitive as others. The 2007 win over Arizona, when Arizona was an 8 seed, Purdue was a 9 seed. Arizona's a blue blood, at least a borderline blue blood, if not a full-blooded blue blood. And try to say that 10 times fast, good luck. To me, that kind of signaled Purdue's arrival. That was their first NCAA tournament under Painter. Had every reason to be happy to be there. You're playing Arizona. Everybody expects Arizona to win because Arizona's Arizona. You got Lute Olson. You've always got players on that team. I can't remember what pros they had on that team. Chase Buttinger, I think, was one of them. But Purdue handled them. Purdue was the better team that day, that Carl Landry, David Teague team. I believe that was the game Chris Kramer made the jump shot from his knees, which is the ultimate contradiction because he obviously was not jumping. He made a shot from his knees. So we'll kind of leave it at that. But they played that game in New Orleans. Purdue then goes on to play Florida, who was unbeatable that year. They were loaded, absolutely loaded. Purdue, I think, gave them the closest game Florida had that entire NCAA tournament. That being said, it wasn't really in doubt, I don't recall. But that was a big-time win over Arizona for Purdue. When Purdue was new to the NCAA tournament, Carl Landry, David Teague, Chris Kramer, Keaton Grant, those guys had never played an NCAA tournament before. They brought their best in their very first NCAA tournament game. Two other games to mention here. These were kind of blowouts, so I tend not to think of them as great games, but they were great performances by Purdue, so they bear mentioning. Obviously, the 2019 win over Villanova, when Villanova looked like it had no idea what to do with Purdue's offense. Villanova tried to switch screens and didn't go well against Purdue's offense, the way Purdue's offense was run and executed. And my defining memory of that game is several instances where Villanova is running the other way when the ball is going into Matt Harms for a dunk or going into whoever for whatever. Purdue just ran circles around them on a de facto home floor advantage. The other thing that stands out to me was that is a Villanova team with rings, with players who've won national titles, and Carson Edwards got between their ears so fast it completely blew that game to all hell, because Carson Edwards comes out, makes a bunch of Carson Edwards threes early on, and you could see Villanova lose its mind over what it felt it had to do to keep up with him, because they lost their poise offensively, probably thinking that Edwards was going to get 75 points in that game, and they had to just, you know, play at a different pace than they wanted to ordinarily. There were seniors on that team who played in national title games, who won national title games, and those guys were psyched out by Carson Edwards. That was college basketball psychological warfare at its finest, and you give Carson Edwards all the credit for that. But that was an unbelievable offensive game for Purdue in general. And just a shock. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Purdue was a 3 seed. Villanova was a 6 seed. That stuff doesn't matter necessarily as much when you're dealing with the defending national champions and you're playing them, you know, on their turf, so to speak. That was every bit as decided of a Villanova home court advantage as the Virginia game was a Purdue home court advantage. You just never necessarily saw it against Villanova because Villanova fans had nothing to cheer for the whole game. The game was almost over before it started. The other game is Baylor in 2008. That was Purdue's second NCAA tournament under Matt Painter. Went to Washington, D.C. Baylor was feeling real good about itself. That was when they were just getting started up under Scott Drew, building into what they are now. A very up-and-down team with a lot of athleticism, a lot of confidence, shall we say. And Purdue laughed at them. They were basically, I compare that Baylor team to the Iowa teams of recent years, where they were really high scoring sorts of teams, didn't take all that much interest in defense. And you saw it. That was almost a perfect game for Purdue offensively. They got whatever shot they wanted to get, whenever they wanted to get it. And made them more often than not. Purdue scored 90 points in a very high tempo game. They beat Baylor at their own game, and my screensaver has come up again, and I'm so flustered I can't even type in my password. See, I'm even putting my computer to sleep with these long, monotonous monologues. So I will cut that off right here. My computer is telling me enough is enough. I agree. I was done anyway. I have no more games to talk about. So that's kind of a review of, I think there were 9 games in here. The 9 best NCAA tournament games or performances for Purdue that I can remember in my frame of reference. So I hope this helped occupy 20 minutes and 45 seconds of your day. I hope you found this interesting. I hope you found this engaging. I hope it drives some conversation on our message boards, perhaps. I hope everyone's doing really well. Remember to take care of yourself, take care of everyone else. And this has been your GoldenBlack.com quarantine simulcast, brought to you by our sponsors, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Follett's Purdue Bookstores, the 6th Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. I do want to remind you once again, the 6th Street Dive remains open in Lafayette for carryout orders, as do our friends of the family, so to speak, Arnie's and Bruno's in West Lafayette. If you need food tonight, give them a call. I know they'd appreciate it. I know we would appreciate it. It is very important. We take care of our local businesses in this very difficult time. And I just ask that you keep them in mind if you're looking for carryout food locally. So please do so. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again somewhere down the line.